John Murphy, Donald Jones moving into hour two of the show, and happy to have for a Tuesday visit this week the Bills' all-time special teams great. He's on the Buffalo Bills Wall of Fame, and he spent the better part of two decades with the NFL on CBS. On the sidelines last Sunday at Heinz Field for the Pittsburgh Steelers game, their victory over the Miami Dolphins. We got a lot to talk about with our buddy Steve Tasker. Welcome, Steve. Thanks for coming in here today.
Thanks for having me on. It's nice, always nice to be here.
And you did, like most of us, get a chance to watch that incredible college football
all
game.
All 8 hours of it.
Yeah. It was long.
It got over at like quarter of one.
I know. Mm-hmm. It was long. But really, one of the, I think, most memorable games I've ever watched. Just back and forth
phenomenal.
At the end.
I think at the end, Clemson scored 21 points in the fourth quarter. And those two touchdowns, one for Bama to go ahead by three, and then with less than 2 minutes to go, and then have Clemson come down the length of the field and score with 1 second on the clock was a great game. It really was tremendous. And you got to be happy for some of those kids on that roster, mm-hmm. but to go through that and to lose. I mean, who knows better than Clemson. Guys like me who to lose a big championship game and come back the next year and try and win it, and then they actually got it done.
Yeah, it was. And John and I talked about this in the first segment of the show. And I asked him if he felt like yesterday's game was better than that USC-Texas game. And, yesterday's game, there was just so much talent all over the field, so many different guys making plays. And John said in that USC-Texas game, it was really Vince Young was making all those plays. He brought that team back for them to end up beating USC. But last night, man, it was just talent all over the field. Everybody's making plays on defense and offense.
Yeah, and that's what it took to beat that Alabama team. You had to have a whole team effort and really guys rise up all over the roster to get it done. And I'm a big Bama fan. I mean, there's a few college programs I really like to follow. Alabama's one of them. Ohio State's another. I didn't think anybody could beat that team because they're a machine. They really are a machine. To get back there as many times as they have under Nick Saban. But it's interesting that a guy like Dabo Swinney can put together a roster like that and get some athletes all over the field and then coach them up well enough. I mean, I saw a lot of great coaching moves in that game on both sides of the field, and I thought that was really impressive game on a lot of levels.
For me, the unsung hero last night was the linebacker. What's his name, John?
Bowler.
Unsung hero last night. I mean, he just made some great plays, just instinctive player. He looks like he's a shorter guy.
Yeah.
He's all over the place.
Zach Thomas kind of guy. And you can see they pointed it out. Herb Street did a nice job of saying, look, you can tell he knows where this play is going. Mm-hmm. There's a sweet play on a big key third down. They came up and tackled him for a loss. He was waving his defender buddies over. He was ahead of the play on a screen pass later in the game. He gave him the big impassioned speech before the game. So, I don't know what he's going to do the rest of his life. It's all downhill from there. He poured it all out that night, and it was great to see. I mean, that's why you got to love college football. Well, your kid's, he's 21 years old. And he's trying to lead, kids, his peers, into something that's that important to all of them. It was pretty cool to see.
And you mentioned Herb Street. I mentioned this in the first hour, Steve. You've been around NFL broadcasts for almost 20 years now. There's a reason why Herb Street is where he is. He is excellent. And, yes, he's had a week or 8 days to prepare for that game last night, but he was sensational. Just picking up on different nuances in the game at one point I'm sitting there watching the game last night thinking, well, obviously Kirk Herbstreit has watched every game these two teams have played over this last year and studied them. He does his homework and it shows.
And it's difficult, too, even more so, much more so than it is what we do in the NFL. We got 50 guys on the roster. Right. We got 110.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's an enormous difference, and to have some background on what every kid, at least certain kids have been through during the season. I think that's what I focus on too, and I like the way he does it. I mean, he doesn't go back. I don't need to know where the kid went to high school or what unless it's like, hey, played quarterback in high school, because when they threw the halfback pass or the wide receiver pass and Alabama to set him up for that touchdown, you had to know that. That was one thing, but what I want to know is what he's done this year. Because every team is different. That last year's Alabama team is much different than this one. And I want to know what they've done this year. And he had a really good handle on how the season has evolved, not just for the teams and their wins and losses, but also for some key players and some of the not-so-key players.
One more thing about the game last night. Steve Tasker in studio with us. You can ring us up at 803-0550 or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. You pointed out, as you sat down here during the break, about the 1 second left, but the last kickoff, the little squib kickoff, you were sitting there waiting for something to happen on that play, huh?
It's easy to say it now, and I'm sitting on my couch, but Yeah, I thought one of the Bama players it was going to charge that and try and scoop it up and go. I mean, that's the only hope they had. You have to scoop it up and go. Now, there was some thought about if you catch the ball after it goes 10 yards and you're on the ground, no time would go off like it did for Clemson when they had recovered it. And then you get a Hail Mary shot. For me, the Clemson players charged the line to get that kick. He hit the bunt onside. If one of the Alabama players waits till he bunts it, waits till he gets about 5 yards or 10 yards or 6 yards till he gets a good bounce, charge it, scoop it. You're already at a full head of steam. Mm-hmm. You got a chance to get out of there and get the touchdown with no time left. I would have been thinking about doing that.
There weren't any Bama players around the ball, really.
They were two guys up on the front line, but they were waiting on it to go 10 yards. My point is, when he bunted it, you know, you got to charge it and grab it, and try and get out of there with the ball.
Nobody thinks to charge it and grab it and try to score on
it. Scoop
that.
It like people, it's a fumble.
Yeah, people don't think they just like get on it. And I mean, everybody's thought process was there. You know, there's still 1 second on the clock and it won't run off.
Yeah, I mean that's a one in a gazillion shot.
Right.
But that's what I would have been thinking. And to get down to that, you think, well, in this kind of game, the way it went, maybe somebody is going to happen, you know, it's like that, because it was that good a game.
Man, if that would have happened, oh, my. Yeah, that would have been the best game ever in the history of football.
That would have been epic.
Well, we want to get you in before we leave this topic, Steve, and again, we can talk about this or the NFL or the Bills coaching search, but our Twitter poll today deals with last night's game and in relation to the Buffalo Bills, and who from last night's game would you like to see drafted by the Buffalo Bills? We've had the poll up for about an hour and a half, more than 800 votes in so far. 45% say they'd like to see the Clemson wide receiver Mike Williams. 38% say they'd like to see the Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson with the Buffalo Bills. 9%, only 9%, say the Alabama linebacker Reuben Foster. 8% say somebody else. What do you got there, Steve? Like any of those three?
Yeah, I like Deshaun Watson. I think he made some throws last night that were excellent. He looked like he read the defense, threw the football over the middle, found some guys over the top of coverage and underneath the deep coverage. Mm-hmm. Was accurate with the ball. Seemed to have a good, nice poise about him. And obviously has an enormous athletic ability as well. Mike Williams would be a great addition as well. But I was listening to your show a little earlier, and somebody said, hey, that kid for Clemson that caught that winning touchdown pass.
Oh, yeah.
Renfro. He could be Julian Edelman. I said, you know, and I'm a little bit with Mike Williams and Renfro. I mean, you could drop Julian Edelman onto the Bills roster, and what does that get us? You know, I mean, there's a bigger question. We run the ball really well. We need to throw it just a little better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with our receiving corps, if we could keep it intact, we'd be multitudes better if we got a guy that could throw the football over the middle.
That's the biggest question. I think that's why so many people are saying receiver, just because, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. And we have four unrestricted free agents at wide receiver. No one knows if you know, I'm sure Robert Woods is going to get some money, you know, whether it's from here or somebody else.
Sure, but that's one of those positions, though. I mean, that just a few years ago, I mean, not so much in this draft, there's not that many guys there. Mike Williams, I think, is the guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you'll look back over the draft with Jarvis Landry, Sammy Watkins, and Odell Beckham Jr. coming out all at the same time. I mean, that's close to the same time. That's, you know, there's guys out there. And I think if you've got a quarterback, you know, I think that solves a lot of those problems. Mm-hmm.
Steve Tasker in studio with us. Phone lines open at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Steve, you spent the weekend in Pittsburgh on the sidelines on Westwood One, right, on the radio side doing the Steelers game against Miami. And I know you've seen a lot of the Dolphins this year, I know. And as I watched that game, I thought about the early season warning you had about the Dolphins' offensive line. Some of that, I think, some of those issues were still in evidence in that game.
I mean, they struggled on the offensive line early in the year, and Adam Gase really deserves a tip of the hat because they were absolute train wreck the first 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season. They were really in bad shape. He cut a couple of offensive linemen that had started games for him. They were backups, but they were forced into the starting duty, and they looked horrible. And he cut them in the first half of the season. And that sent a message to that whole team, I think.
Right.
They had to upgrade their offensive line. They started to do that. Even so, they end up getting Ryan Tannehill busted up, and he can't finish the season. They go 2-1 with Matt Moore to get to the playoffs. Adam Gase did a wonderful job with the Dolphins this year, no question about it. And they leaned on their defense, and they ran into a Pittsburgh team that, in the cold weather, just seemed more comfortable. Antonio Brown made a couple of plays early on, and that put that game away quick. And Miami was just never going to, you know, never going to climb out of that hole. As you see, this is the second touchdown after the first one that they scored. And that was really the ball game for them. Even though Miami came back and got back on the score, on the board, this touchdown, which was the first one, put them away.
Yeah.
Now, you look at this Pittsburgh team, everybody talked about, you know, that was a lot of people's picks going into the season for making it to the Super Bowl. Do you think how they're playing right now, is that a team that you can see, you know, derailing New England and getting
Pittsburgh, yes. And Kansas City, too, I could see. Although Kansas City is about 90% or 85% of what they should be when they're not in their own building. Mm. They don't play well on the road, never have, because their home field is so loud and nasty. It changes them when they go on the road. They notice it too much when they go on the road. Mm-hmm. It's not so much that the home crowd that they're at on the road is that bad, but it's the absence of their own crowd, I think, that multiplies that for them. But having said that, both them and Pittsburgh this next game, this next week, will have a chance to do that. I'm not holding out much hope that the Houston Texans are going to walk in there with Savage and beat the New England Patriots in Foxborough, although Bill O'Brien is a little bit of a wild card. He knows some things about that building. So, I would give both those teams a chance to go in, but Kansas City's going to do it with turnovers and with defense and with a big play here and there.
Right.
So
I thought Miami's secondary was exposed in that game early on.
Well, they were nicked. I mean, they had three guys on the field that shouldn't have been on the field. It's the same story we talked about. I talked about earlier with their offensive line, how it was in the first month and a half of the season. They ended the season when their secondary was in the same shape. Three starters were out. Jones was out. Rashad Jones was out. He's the all-pro safety.
Right.
And it's like the Bills. I mean, you miss the safety. I mean, the guy's the quarter, gets everybody lined up. Everybody's on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And they missed him. And then, of course,
Byron Maxwell.
Byron Maxwell was out of this game. And so it's like, oh, my God. And you're going against Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger with a team that runs the ball really well with Le'Veon Bell. I mean, you're up against it then. Now, they played all right.
Yeah.
But first two pass plays crushed them.
Jay Ajayi seemed to be, like, non-existent in that game. Was it because their offensive line wasn't intact all the way? I mean,
I think Pittsburgh played their run game really well. And they couldn't answer. Mm-hmm. I mean, they couldn't pull them out of that. They were stopping the run with seven guys, you know, in the box, and then walking down, and even sometimes walking the seventh guy out of the secondary down into the box to stop the run. So when you can do that, you're going to win.
I think Pittsburgh is formidable. And Donald, I think you laughed at me last week. I can see them going. It's going to be tough in Kansas City.
Well, we've seen it before.
But I can see them even winning at New England the way they're rolling right now.
Yeah, and I agree. Their defense is playing well enough. And we've seen teams like the Giants in 2007 and 2011 go in, get hot at the right time, go in with a 9-7 record, squeak into the playoffs, get hot, and find a formula that seems to get them through the teams they got to get through to get to the Super Bowl and beat really good New England teams both times. Pittsburgh's on that kind of a spot. They kind of muddled their way through the first half of the season, kind of started to get healthy, and now they're in a spot where they're playing solid. I mean, they're not. Antonio Brown is a spectacular player. Le'Veon Bell is a spectacular player. Their offensive line is playing really well. They'll come in with a heavy lineup as well sometimes. I mean, they scored on the Dolphins last week on Sunday in one of those drives. They never threw the ball a single time, not once.
Did they do that against us?
Yeah, like, felt like it.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Like 9 out of 10 plays or something like that?
Right, so they've got that in their arsenal, and that's what you need to go in and run and win some places. So I think, I was liking the Pittsburgh at the beginning of the season because of their offense. And I think nothing's changed. I think there's still a team that could go, but you still have to go through New England.
You're on the broadcast, and the game's moving along, and now Pittsburgh has the game in hand, fourth quarter. At any point did you say to your broadcast partners, what is Roethlisberger still doing in this game? What was he doing?
Yeah, I thought they got him out one series too late. They started. I thought they had him out there, and right when he said that, we all thought the same thing. I was like, you know what? At this point, when they got up 30-6 or whatever that was, then it's the point where, you know what? Now it's time to set the guy down. And, you know, everybody kind of it occurred to everybody the exact same time. It's one series too long. They left those guys out there, I thought.
And he comes up with a
nick. But I also see that, you know, that's tough teams do that. Big physical teams do that, and they seem to when they're successful, they get away with that kind of thing, playing mm-hmm. that way. But I think when you start playing scared and you start playing safe is when bad things happen as well. So you can see both sides of the argument, but I always – you know, you don't tell them you're going to take them out. You just say, hey, you're done. And
yeah.
That's it. And then it comes to a halt. But I agree with you. One series too long, and obviously they paid the price for it. I don't think it's going to bother them in the game. But the risk is evident that he did get a little chip on his paint job.
John and I talked about I didn't realize this was like the first playoff game that Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, and Le'Veon Bell were on the same field.
Ever.
Yeah.
Three of them. Playoff.
All three of them. Their first playoff game together.
That's a great, you know, big three, as they call it.
That's a good boost, you know. Yeah. I mean, it makes you feel like, you know, they do have something in the tank that nobody has seen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And particularly in playoff week, and I got asked this a lot in a bunch of interviews I did during the week leading up to these games. When you hit wild card week, man, I'm telling you what, everything inside the building changes. Everything. In playoffs, everything changes. And you get deeper into the playoffs, it's even intensified. Your level of concentration is up. Your work ethic is up. Guys are going the extra mile. They're trying to think of new and different ways to play better and mm-hmm. find more out about their opponent, get more into their playbook. And you can say, well, they should do that all the time. Yeah, they should. But I'm telling you, the motivation is intensified greatly. When you get to the playoffs, the whole building just battens down the hatches. I mean, everybody's the atmosphere in the locker room's different. The atmosphere in your individual team meeting rooms is different. Practice is different. The coaching staff's different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's turned up.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to be around that. It's really fun. And you can see it in the way these guys play. And I think that when you get three guys on the field like we're talking about with Brown and Bell and Roethlisberger, it's awesome to see. I mean, that's why you get teams that can run the table, like the Packers did at the end of the season. You know, you get healthy, you start to play better. All of a sudden, you think, you know what? Why not this year? You know.
I'm not sure if you got to see the other games, but the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, the way he's playing right now, it's lights out. Do you think they can go into Dallas and beat that team?
Yeah, they can because of Aaron. I mean, they're going to have to do some things. I think they're going to have to do some things off the page. Like Aaron has done. I mean, he's going to hold the ball for 9 seconds and dance around. Mm-hmm. And he's going to make guys miss in the pocket without moving 3 feet. You know, he's going to be in a phone booth, mm-hmm. and nobody's going to be able to get a hand on him. And he'll find a touchdown. You know, and it's just he is so gifted that way. And what he did to the Giants by buying time. You know, I don't know why teams don't put that in their playbook.
Yeah.
You know, here's the play. Everybody, we're going to drop back 5 steps. You're going to funnel your off defensive lineman outside. He's going to step up and he's going to run side to side from sideline to sideline for about 5 seconds. And the receivers just find a spot.
Let's get open.
You know, put that play in because it works every single week in the NFL, every week without fail. And even if it doesn't, the guy throws it away. So it's just another incomplete pass. But you know, it's a hard thing to plan, I guess. I don't know.
What you said about the increased focus, the ramped up focus in the playoffs.
I think I know where he's going.
We're on the same place. How does that apply to the Giants wide receiving core on a boat in Miami? You have a problem with that?
No, I don't have a problem.
Okay.
With that.
But it kind of goes against what you said about.
Yeah, but that was you're still celebrating. That's Sunday night.
Yeah.
Your week hasn't even started yet. These guys just took a deep breath, and believe me, when they came into the building on Monday, they were ready to go. You know, for those people who, you know, are talking about how the Giants dropped those passes, the receiving core dropped the pass, and let's see somebody else go out there and catch them at 0 degrees, and you can say, hey, Packers did it. Well, they caught a number of passes too. So I don't. What happened 6 days before this?
Right.
Yeah, it has no bearing on
it. Now, the fact that they came out in the pregame with no shirts on, it almost seemed like they were just trying to show everybody, like, you know, this is what – so it's kind of like they were still thinking about that as well, even in the pregame, the day of the game.
Maybe.
They needed to have the jeans and the work boots on, though, to complete
They should have put their hard hats on, you know. I don't know. Should have brought lunch pails out or something. I don't know what you do. Come on, man. It's all.
I think they had like a calendar shoot.
That's social media junk. You know?
They shouldn't have posted it. That's social media, right? They shouldn't have posted it when they went.
Listen, we had our cameras. They were doing the same thing in Pittsburgh. Mm. You know,
oh, yeah, they were. They
the
were.
Dolphins guy came out without a shirt on, and I can't remember which guy it was. It was it was Shazier. Mm. The Pittsburgh guy came out without a shirt on. Same thing. So it's when one guy thinks of it, it's like two guys going to the patent office with the same invention. You know, they all got an idea. They're going to do this on game day.
We want to get you into the coaching search for the Bills, but we're going to keep you for a couple more minutes if that's okay. But even before that, let's finish off the divisional round of the playoffs. And you talked a little bit about Houston at New England. The point spread says there's no chance for Houston. There really isn't a chance for Houston other than the fact that their defense is playing pretty well, right? I mean, Clowney has found himself. And
their defense is for real. They're going to have to find an idea, an answer. Not they're not even – I don't. Here's the thing. New England's going to have an answer for Clowney. The question is, can the others play well enough to beat New England without Clowney getting, you know, like you see the tipped interceptions and wreaking havoc, getting penetration in the backfield. He's not going to have that kind of game in New England. Can they beat him without him doing that? Mm-hmm. Can they stop New England from scoring that many points? That's the question. And can they turn it around the other side with the quarterback situation they got with a guy like Osweiler? Can they get it done offensively? I would say no. But without Clowney – and in the years past, it would have been J.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt.
Their defense is not as formidable as it needs to be going into New England.
And what about Seattle and Atlanta, the early Saturday game? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I like Atlanta at home. I think this is a time when, you know, people – this is a time where, you know, Matt Ryan is – you know, he's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he'll evaporate in this big moment. I think they've got the weapons on the outside and the ability to score points, particularly in that building. And I think they're going to be good enough. And I don't think Seattle's offense or their defense is what it needs to be to go on the road and beat those guys down there. I think their offense certainly at times shows some things. But I don't think – no, I don't. I think Atlanta's a better football team right now.
Now, you don't think –
and they're playing at home.
Seattle's one of those teams that they've been playing together for so long. And they've been in the playoffs every year, essentially, for like the last 5 years. You don't think that has any bearing on how they come into a game like this playing, even on the road? Like,
sure.
Those guys know how to play together in the playoffs.
They're a good football team. They're there for a reason. They earned their shot there, and they did it when Russell Wilson was really injured throughout the regular season. He had a couple of different injuries, and they still earned their way to the divisional round of the playoffs with, you know, winning a playoff game. So, yeah, they're a good football team, but going on the road down to Atlanta, when you get to this point, you're going to meet a team in Atlanta who's won a ton of games this year and who has been resting and getting ready for you.
Yeah.
You're going to get a rested, fresh, and all that stuff I said about wild card week has been going on all that time for Atlanta. They're going to come out, and I think Atlanta is going to come out and really hit them with a big shot. Big shot early, and we'll see how long it lasts. But I you know, this is a game where I think Atlanta's has a chance to explode because of their talent, because of the fact they're rested, and because they're at home, and they, you know, it's their first playoff game, and I think that's going to do a lot for them.
You lived this when you played here, your Bills team. Do we undervalue that bye week, that first week off, and what it means to a team to, as you said, rest and relax and refocus?
I think it does a little bit. Yeah, I mean, it's. In some ways, I think, and I was completely wrong this year, but in the past, I've always said that the wild card weekend was the best weekend because you get these two teams that have, for the most part, fought and clawed and scratched their way in, and now they got that you know, that boost.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot, yeah, four
year.
Teams laid down. I mean, they couldn't even hang. So I was shocked by that. So I think, being rested goes a long way in today's NFL. That extra week of healing up, getting an extra, you know, that many days off, a couple of days off is all. I mean, you're just begging for some rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where you don't have to go out and run a nine route, you know, in practice, fighting a guy all the way. You know, you're competing all the time. You just need a break from it. And I think it is undervalued, that bye week. I think these teams are going to – I've always been – and now I'm probably going to pay the price for saying this again. The division round of the playoffs is the worst weekend of football because all these teams get rested – and they see, and these teams at wild card, they go in, and they fight this hook and fight and claw and scratch, and now they're used up, and now they don't get a bye week, and now you're playing a team that's really good, who's rested.
Yeah.
I think it's a recipe for blowouts.
All right, we're going to break, and Steve's going to stay with us, and we're going to talk about the Bills coaching search and coaching searches around the NFL. You're welcome to join us. Phone line's open, 803-0550, or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. We are honored to have Steve Tasker in studio with us from the NFL on CBS. He covered the Pittsburgh-Miami game last week. You just throw your glasses down?
Just slid them across.
Very aggressive.
I don't like people see me in my glass. I'm vain, you know.
Really?
Let's talk a little bit about the coaching search, Steve. You follow this, obviously, and the Bills have talked to the four so far, including, let's recap a little bit who they have talked to. Chris Richard talked to on Sunday, the Seattle Seahawks defensive coordinator. They talked with Harold Goodwin on Saturday, offensive coordinator of the Arizona Cardinals. Anthony Lynn on Thursday of last week. Of course, we know about him. And Sean McDermott now 6 days ago, the defensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers. And it's been quiet since then. No interviews that we're aware of. And they've done a pretty good job of updating when the interviews are conducted. One coaching move in the NFL. I don't think Doug Marrone was on the Buffalo Bills list to be the head coach. So the field is pretty wide open. What do you think, first of all, of this coaching field? There are Donald and I were talking the other day how it's notably lacking some really big splashy names this year in the coaching
field.
Yeah,
I think teams are starting to get ahead. And I don't know this, but I know some teams get outside help. They go kind of the corporate world, kind of headhunters kind of guys, and consultants who say, here's what, you know, here's the guys who've been successful, here's their common denominators. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And here, I don't know how it works. But I think most, it's such an enormous responsibility. I mean, you're the face of a billion-dollar business. You got to, you know, you get some professional help to pick these guys and some parameters and within which to do it. I think it all starts to boil down to people are starting to look for the same characteristics, which means they're looking at the same small pool of applicants, and they're trying to root around the guy that nobody else sees, kind of, and they're also looking to get guys that everybody sees. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that you're right. It's the same group of people that come together to the top of the lists. And what the reasons are for that, I don't know. But I know that they're all trying to find the same guy. So that kind of points to the same type of guy. So I mean, they're trying to achieve the same goal. Yeah. So that all points to the same type of guy that they're looking at. And as you see, every year, it's a little bit different than it was the year before, and different guys emerge. It's really interesting. It's a great dynamic. I mean, they should do a scientific study on how it works and how it happened, and because I think it'd be really insightful as to how group dynamics and that kind of thing work. You know? Because it's a great. You talk about the draft being trying to pick a good player.
Right.
try picking a great head coach. I mean,
it's hard.
It's hard.
Yeah. It's also like a youthful group.
It is.
You know, there's nobody really above, what, like 50?
48?
Yeah, 48.
Yeah, we were
talking
yesterday.
Well, I think that's one of the things, too. Yeah. They want guys that they can start. They want a guy that's going to hang in there for 20 years. Mm-hmm. They want a guy like that. They want a decade and a half run. So that, you know, if you get a guy who's 60, you're out of the loop. That ain't going to work. When he's 75, it's not going to work.
We were talking, and what Donald mentioned, we came up with yesterday in trying to, you know, characterize those four Bills interviews, and they all range in age between Richard, who's, what, 38, and Anthony Lynn, who's 48. So there's that. Other than that, we're having a hard time putting, like, one stamp on what the four interviews share in common. The one thing, Steve, we got into this with a guest last week, Dominic Foxworth, who played in the league, wrote a really interesting article about a head coach should be more of a CEO. Not, you don't look to coordinators, which kind of got us thinking about special teams coaches, maybe people who have not called plays, like a Harold Goodwin we talked about earlier, and maybe guys who have a kind of a bigger picture view of what goes on out there. I think that's
a good
way to look at it.
John Harbaugh was a special teams coach, and he's a success story. Now Frank Gans was the other way, and Frank Gans back in Kansas City, he was not a successful head coach. He's a very successful and well-respected coach, but mm-hmm. he never had a success as a head coach. I agree completely. He is not a coach. He's an executive who gets different aspects of his company working at high level. He gets his he gets the director of the offense, the coordinator of the offense to work well, the defense to work well, the special teams to work well. He's got to work with personnel on that side of it. He's got to work with the media on this side of it. He's got a lot of things on his plate. Plus, he dictates the schedule. He dictates all the
logistical stuff,
the uniform stuff, the equipment stuff. Yeah. The schedule is an enormous issue. They got a lot of things on there. They call the shots for the organization, basically. They can't. I think it's a mistake for them to get into the minutia of an offensive or defensive game plan.
Right.
Most head coaches, the closest they get to calling a play is, hey, I think you need to keep it on the ground here. That's it. Yeah. You pick the play, just don't throw it. Mm-hmm. Hey, get after him, send some pressure. That's as much as the defensive side they'll get into. Other than that, you know, they got guys that spend, you know, these you know, well documented 18-hour days getting ready to do this. You know, don't, you know, that,
yeah.
And I think that's the way you got to be as a head coach. You got to be a manager who's looking at clock, game clock management, challenge flag, timeout management, all of that, rather than who you're going to have in the game on a 3rd and 5. You know, I think there's different aspects of the game, and it's very, very, very complicated.
Now, let's just say, to play devil's advocate, you have one of these great coordinators, and, you know, we all know that being a great coordinator, you got to have players that make the plays, right? But you have one of these great coordinators that really has a crazy offense or a crazy defense. He comes into your place to interview, and he says, and he's going to be a rookie head coach, and he says, I want to call the offense or I want to call the defense.
I get it.
Does that raise red flags for you if you're the person?
Oh, a little bit, yeah. But, you know, you got head coaches doing it. I mean, Mike McCarthy's doing it, but he's got Aaron Rodgers, you know.
Sean Payton does it.
He's got Drew Brees. You know, Andy Reid's got it in Kansas City. He had it in Philadelphia. Right. He does that. He's been a very successful head coach, although he's never won the won the championship. He's been to 5 or 4 AFC championship, NFC championship games, and he you know, wreaked havoc in the NFC East. So he's a good head coach. Some guys can do it, but I think it has to come down to the franchise that you're working for and the people you've got on the field and on the staff. Here's the thing. Everybody tends to think all 32 teams are the same from the coaching staff up, through the general manager, the president, vice president, executive vice president of football operations in Jacksonville's now Tom Coughlin. You got all this hierarchy that nobody really knows about, which tells you all 32 franchises are a lot alike, but they're all very, very unique. Who the head coach reports to? Does the head coach report to the general manager or the ownership? Does the general manager report to the ownership or the president? Does the general manager oversee the, you know, do the coordinators have a venue to the general manager? Does the ownership call in there every day, want to know what's going on? Why aren't you making this move or that move? Or does the ownership just parachute in on draft day and kind of watch what's going on? Every franchise is different. So if you've got a head coach who wants to call plays, that's fine. But you've got to have an organization that's ready to accommodate it. And he's got to assemble the staff that's there for that as well.
We're with Steve Tasker. A couple of more minutes. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550 or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Here is Dave in Buffalo. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the air.
When Pegula's bought the team, I thought, man, maybe we're going to have a fresh start. I mean, I've had enough of the Pennsylvania connection with Tom Donahoe and then Doug Whaley. They haven't been successful. I don't understand why we're not looking into, like, New England, Green Bay, Seattle, somebody in the upper part, and get another general manager in here to try to build us a successful franchise. I mean, these guys are second tier. So you got the guy from the offensive coordinator from Arizona. He's got number one in offense. Are they in the playoffs? No. So how many times have they been in the playoffs the past, say, 5 years? And I'm being nice. I would like to
Arizona. I think probably 3 of those 5 had been in the playoffs.
Yeah, but 3 of the 5. Yeah,
whatever.
I mean, so I get you. Your point is you're not really happy with the way the team has been handled from the roster spot, right? I mean, you think Doug Whaley's not put good players on the roster?
No, I mean the Pennsylvania connection. I mean, geez, we went with Donahoe, and then we were going to pay what, $5 million for somebody who only went to one Super Bowl.
Donahoe hasn't been here in 10 years as a GM?
I know. Yeah. No, he ruined the team.
Hired by a different owner.
Well, I mean, yeah.
With Bill Cowher.
Hired by a different owner. I mean, yeah, I don't get the Pennsylvania connection thing.
It was the Pennsylvania connection. And we were going to pay, what, $5 million a year for for Bill Cowher to come here for being the coach for 15 years and only one Super Bowl? Is that all we're espoused to do, and we were going to make the mistake of doing that?
No, yeah. They didn't hire Cowher. I don't. There's a lot there. I don't know how to.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, you don't want us to be Pittsburgh Steelers North. I get that.
You can do a lot worse than being Pittsburgh Steelers North.
Well, this year you could, and most years you could. But I get it. I mean, you feel you get into a rut where you think the organization's gone too far down one avenue, where they're picking executives from only one tree of a lot of different trees available in a forest, and a lot of people have that philosophy. But that's. You got to talk to Terry Pegula, and you got to talk to Jerry Jones. You got to talk to Dan Rooney. They all have their own way of doing things, and the own way of doing own philosophy of how to do things. And when you're trying to hire people, I don't think anybody gets caught up in what tree they're from, or what part of the country, or what franchise they actually cut their teeth on. They're trying to find the best guy.
Yeah.
When they come in, they've got to click, because these guys, particularly in the building, from the general manager down, they work very closely together in the building 365 days a year. They got to like each other and see eye to eye on a lot of issues. Now, they don't have to love each other, but they got to be able to work together and make tough decisions. And I'm a big proponent of, it's not always a bad thing when they don't like each other or they don't work that well together, because you don't want guys who are whatever you want. You got to have different voices in the room, bringing everything into play. They say, well, what about this? And playing devil's advocate. And a lot of franchises get caught up in this, we're all in it together kind of thing, and don't have a second voice. I see the benefit of it, but there's two ways to look at it. I've seen both ways be successful. The question is, can you do it with who you've got in the building now? And I think, Dave didn't think we could do that.
Right.
No matter who this head coach is going to be. So that's hard to talk you out of it, I know.
Yeah. I don't have to talk him out of it. That's a legit belief, I guess. But it doesn't matter, there's connection to Donahoe.
We could hire anybody here, and there's still going to be people who criticize it, because that's the world we live in now.
Yeah.
So I think you just got to hope that they get a guy that can figure it out, and they'll support him until he does.
Around about midseason, you, Steve, had a kind of a coaching candidate short list that included Vance Joseph, who's getting some interviews now, including he's been linked pretty strongly to the Denver Broncos. That would not surprise you, I guess, right?
No, I liked him. I liked him when I spoke to him, and you get a feel for when you sit down with these guys for 10 minutes. It's not a head coaching interview process, obviously. It's more of a production meeting for a game. But I liked his demeanor. I liked the way he talked about his players. I liked the perception I got about his relationship with his players and how he handled his whole defense. I thought was great, and he's working for a head coach who was an offensive guy in Adam Gase, like we spoke about earlier in the show. I think, he had a lot of autonomy in his defensive meeting room to run that defense, because his coach wasn't an defensive guy. I like his demeanor. I like his attitude. I like the atmosphere of that defense. He had a lot of good players on that side of the football, and he knew how to handle them. And I like the way he spoke about them and what his philosophy was and what they were doing in that particular game. He went on my short list for that. And you said I had a little short list. None of the guys I picked are getting, except for Vance Joseph.
Jim Bob Cooter, though, who you like a lot from Detroit.
I can't understand why nobody's talking to Jim Bob Cooter, because you go into Detroit, a team that is forever – you think it's bad in Buffalo. They haven't been close. I mean, they've been in the playoffs since Buffalo has, but they're a franchise that has never even gotten a whiff of a Super Bowl. And he comes in, and in a year and a half, a season and a half, has got Matt Stafford talking, their MVP, MVP talk. I don't know how you don't get that guy on your list.
Donald has a theory on that.
Well, I was talking to somebody, and I can't remember who.
Nobody wants to hire a coach named Jim Bob.
There you go.
Exactly. That can't be true, can it?
He'd work if he was a NASCAR team. If we're working for NASCAR, Jim Bob Cooter's A1 on the list. I mean, you can't hire anybody except him.
There have been head coaches named Fuzzy. I'm trying to think of the great head coach names. Bum. You had a head coach named Bum. I mean, come on. Really, that can't be the reason. Right? Good head coaches. Come on. That's
I know. But I don't know. I get a feel for these guys, and those are the guys I kind of keep your eye out for, guys like that who are up-and-coming guys, and you try and cultivate a relationship with them so that when they do become a head coach, you have a chance to talk to them on a different level than just guys who have met them for the first time. And I was impressed with both those guys and other guys around the league too, no question about it. The league is it gets lost sometimes. The league is full of enormously
talented,
quality people.
Yeah.
And it's fun to get a chance to talk to those guys. And I understand why it's hard to hire a head coach, because I'll tell you what, there are a lot of quality guys out there. We haven't even spoken about Frank Reich.
Yeah.
And what I think about him.
Man, we've gotten that name so many times.
It's a tough thing to do, because there's so many unknowns going into it.
Well, maybe next week we'll have a head coach to talk about. I think we might.
Do you think, Steve, that, you know, when you have your guy in the building, you should pull the trigger? Or should you just go for a full search regardless? Should you say, these are the guys we have on the list. If it's six guys, if the third guy really is the guy, like, oh, we really like this guy, do you pull the trigger at that point, or do you?
Yeah, I don't know. I think when you find the right guy, you find the right guy. But I do think you put a full search on if you can.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't say that even if they wanted to give Anthony Lynn this job right away, they don't go out there and see if somebody knocks their socks off. They think, right. Well, you know what? This guy's better. Because it's my – and I talked about this before they even fired Rex. I thought, you know, the problems you have are always better than the problems you don't know you've got yet.
Right.
And to hire a new coach –
I got to think about that.
You're going to be – The problems you have are easier to address than the problems you don't even know you've got yet. And when you hire a new head coach, we're going to be 2 years into it before we realize, okay, and this is where we have to massage the organization to fit his qualities, mm-hmm. and we bring in some help here. That's 2 years down the road. If you got Anthony Lynn here, you feel like you have a better handle on who he's probably going to be as a head coach.
And
I think that changes things a little bit.
But
I'm still a fan of putting a full search on, because, you know, the next Bill Belichick is out there somewhere.
You know what else? You said something a couple weeks ago, and I've thought about it a lot, when you said something like the first thing you do when you're in a hole is stop digging.
Stop digging.
Yeah. That kind of is what you said, too, about the problems you have. I mean,
the problems you have that you know about are easier to address than the problems you have that you have no idea about.
Yeah.
And
the wisdom of Steve Cassidy.
That's like my father used to say.
Call it, wisdom is not what a lot of people call it.
Very good.
My father used to say.
You should read Twitter sometime after one of my games.
If I put my problems on the table, you put your problems on the table, I bet you walk away with your problems.
I've heard that too. Yeah, yeah. If you lined up the whole world's problems, you'll probably walk off with your own if you could pick them.
That's philosophy being dished out here.
That's what it is. I mean, you're signing up for the unknown when you hire people at this level of a business that's this big, mm-hmm. and garners this much attention. So it's a huge job. It's a huge responsibility, and it's ultimately the deciding factor as to whether the Buffalo Bills end their drought. If the Cleveland Browns end their drought, if the Detroit Lions climb out of their problems,
win a playoff game,
this hire for every team is that's what's going to do it. This hire will decide whether you do that or not.
We'll talk to you about it next week. Thank you for this.
All right,
appreciate
man. Thanks,
it.
Guys.
Steve Tasker
always
in studio
always,
with us.
Always have a blast.
Yeah, it's fun. Steve Tasker is with us. We got more to come.